This is Windy City Sports Talk, hosted by Will Hatzel. Windy City Sports Talk features all the latest news and in-depth analysis for the Bears,
the Bear,
Bulls,
the Bulls,
Blackhawks, Cubs,
holy cow,
and White Sox.
You can put it on the board, yes!
It's time to talk Windy City Sports.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Windy City Sports Talk. Hey, I wasn't planning on doing a podcast this week, have a lot going on, so I figured I would just take the week off and just start looking into some guest booking for the next couple of weeks here with podcasts and topics I want to go over, but I just can't stay away from talking about the Bears, so, and all this craziness going on, the world has turned upside down after one loss, even though we all know this team was probably the fakest team, the imposter in the NFL's version of Among Us, if you will, if any of you are into that trendy mobile game right now. But I decided, hey, I got to do a podcast. There's no way I could let this go because this is a crucial time for the Bears. They're kind of in a crisis. And if they don't turn this around pretty soon, well, that 5-1 start to the season is going to be for naught. So joining me is, again, my frequent flyer, who I'm going to have to start sending some gift baskets to him because I always bug him, it seems like, every other week almost now, is my buddy Zach Heilman, the host of his own podcast, which you should check out, the Gridiron Gallery. So be sure to check that out on social media. Be sure to check that out, all his podcasts. He does a lot of great things covering different football leagues and whatnot. So I'm bringing in Zach now. Zach, thank you so much for joining me on the Spur of the Moment podcast.
Hey, much appreciated, at least for being on. Not really appreciating the loss or anything whatsoever, but, you know, it's good to be on here. Tell you what, you could send me, if you want a gift, I'm good with any fare from up where you're at, because I living in Indianapolis, I miss some stuff. So if you can get me a Gel Sosimo's deep dish pizza, that will solve all my woes.
I literally just ate a deep dish pizza, so I totally know how you – I just finished eating, and then I hopped up here to get this going. But, yeah, I can do that for you. I'm also a fellow deep dish lover, and it's a Chicago thing, so I guess I got to be the Chicago guy here and say, yeah, go for the deep dish. Mm-hmm. But actually, before we dive into this here, you know, like what I always like to do is, hey, take the floor for a moment and let the people know where they can follow you and, you know, all about your podcast and where they could listen in.
Yeah, let's get these notes out of the way. So here's the deal, guys. You can follow Gridiron Gallery on any of your favorite social media applications or sites. That's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those. You can find it at ZK Podcast. That is at ZKPODCAST. Also, episodes release every Friday. We're actually going to be recording one, not joking, right after I record here, Will, for our NFL version. We're doing bi-weekly NFL editions with two of my former high school football teammates, as well as a guest that is another one. That was my quarterback in high school. So we're going to be doing a discussion with those guys too. And yeah, generally bi-weekly NFL discussion, all and other things in between during those weeks that are not NFL, and all those release Fridays, generally around 10 a.m. And the live version you can listen to on Unhinged Sports Network at 11 a.m. Eastern time.
Well, there you have it. Be sure to check out all of his stuff. And yeah, he's a hardworking man. He's coming on this podcast, recording it, then he's going to go do his own. So, well, let's get into it. It's unfortunately, Zach, not exactly a, hey, the Bears are 5-2, everything's looking good, they just had one disappointing night against the Rams talk. It's nowhere near that, actually. It's very concerning, but it's nothing new. It is literally the norm. It is the, as much as the great defenses and Hall of Fame defensive players are what make the Bears as a team, as a franchise, legendary, they're just as legendary in a bad way on offense, with the curse of never having a good quarterback and never having an offense to ever meet the potential or match the potential of a stellar defense. And we really saw that here against the Rams on Monday Night Football, where they're kind of the complete package. I know people like to say they're overrated. I actually don't think they're overrated. I think they're underrated, but that's a whole different topic. But the Rams are ideally what you wish the Bears could be, where you have that stellar defense, some of the top defensive players in the league on your team, matched with a good offensive coach who calls great great play calling ability and strategy works. You got multiple running backs that they could use. And you got Jared Goff, who he may not be the prettiest quarterback to watch throw the ball or play out there compared to others, but the guy could get the job done, and he's already proven it, I think, on more than one occasion, even if he's not the most electric. What were your overall thoughts on this Bears-Rams game where the Bears didn't score an offensive touchdown?
Well, look, you just said it right there. Offense is really what draws me attention. I mean, we knew, you and I, Will, we knew how poor this offense was and that it was a defensive team to carry it. But, I mean, I didn't think we were expecting to see a degrading of offense again. I thought there'd be more progression, at least. And, yes, the Rams, as much as Carolina has been a tough opponent this year, and they're one of the better 3-4 teams you'll find in the NFL right now. The LA Rams was another good litmus test for Chicago, and I thought this offense would be at least capable of moving the ball somewhat and understanding that, hey, you know, if we read some game film from the previous week watching the San Francisco 49ers, we can kind of learn how to maybe adjust the run game to better suit to play against the Rams' defensive front seven. Turns out, wasn't the case. I don't know what film they watch over at Hallis Hall, but you don't just run right at Aaron Donald every play, you know, and you don't just assume that this Bears line is going to give you at least I would say over 3 seconds of time to throw a ball. Like, let's be honest. Nick Foles, he did not have a good night again, but you can only go so far to give him criticism when your line can barely give you 3 seconds. That is the bare minimum you're supposed to give a quarterback. We were always taught in high school, 3 seconds is what he needs to get rid of that ball generally. Or it takes about three, you're trying to get a 3 second clock for defense as well. So that's the battle you have in the trenches. I look at their offense. They didn't either didn't watch film, or Matt Nagy still doesn't understand the personnel that is on his field. Because like I said, if he did, he would find ways to give Nick Foles a chance to not be a sitting duck all the time in the pocket, because he is a statue, as many have said around Chicago media. You know, he's not Mitch Trubisky. He can't move. We knew this going in, but it seems like we instantly threw that out the door when Foles was thrown into the fray, and it's just gotten worse every week. Obviously, injuries don't help when you have James Daniels get knocked out for the year, but they just cannot seem to catch a break or find out what their personnel works best at. And I say, at least to end this point, I think it goes back to play calling. You know, this one, I think in the last two and about a half years now, I think this really shows like, hey, Nagy may have been just really good at disguising some things, because now it's coming pretty much into the open where I don't know if he's really worth being a play caller at this point.
Yeah, he's I'm running out of ways to defend Nagy and even Pace, and I will want to touch up on the offensive personnel and, you know, roster decisions and moves or lack of moves here over the last 6 months too. I know it was an awkward, you know, off season because of the pandemic, but they still were able to sign players. The draft went on normally, just digitally, basically. You watched it at home and through computers and things like that. But before we get into that, I think we need to talk about the quarterback, and the two most important pieces of this offense is the quarterback and the play caller, which is Matt Nagy. And I was watching the game with a couple of friends on Monday night, and they're still kind of – they actually blame Nagy more for the offensive struggles than Trubisky, and they actually feel like Nagy hasn't done enough for him to help him be a better quarterback and develop better and quickly and things like that. And I still kind of disagree with them, but to be honest, Foles hasn't exactly knocked our socks off. I mean, when he came in – for relief and had that epic comeback, throwing three touchdowns, almost throwing four. And just, I mean, I know it's a struggling Atlanta team, but again, for him to come in his first game time since getting hurt in Jacksonville at the beginning of last season. I mean, when you throw somebody in a pit of chaos like that, where the Bears were down, you know, multiple scores, the way he played, that was the best we saw him. The only thing he's really done better that I do enjoy this, but there's still many other issues, is he's got a better completion percentage than Trubisky. Trubisky completed 59% of his passes. And to be fair, Foles has started in a few more games than Mitch at this point, but a 64% completion percentage. I mean, you want to be in the 60s. Like, that's ideal for a good quarterback, an ideal starting quarterback. And Foles, he's made some good throws. He's made a couple of plays, but he's not as good. We obviously know he's not as good as Mitch when it comes to running. I mean, he has no mobility. I mean, there's a couple of times he doesn't even try. He knows that he's not capable of running and being agile with his feet, that he will just stubbornly stay in the pocket and throw a pass and force it. And that's how we saw a couple of interceptions throughout this season so far in many games. 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions on the year. And that first interception he threw in the end zone on Monday was crucial, because you're talking the game could have been, I think it could have been 17-10 at that point. It ended up being 20. Mm-hmm. It was 24-10 because the Rams ended up going down the field and scoring on that drive. I haven't been that impressed with Foles, but in my opinion, it's the play calling and the lack of personnel around him that's good with playmaking in terms of wide receivers getting open, having more than David Montgomery as a reliable back, and the fact that now the interior of the offensive line is destroyed because Cody Whitehair is hurt, James Daniels out for the season, like you mentioned earlier. So, what are your thoughts on Foles, and does a lot of the blame rest on him, or do you place it elsewhere?
I mean, you got to give him some blame, because I want to go back to that interception, because that one has been heavily talked about this week, not only for Foles, but also just play design in general. Because, yes, you got to knock Foles for throwing that ball. Throw it away. Okay, you have two receivers that are not in the best position to get that ball. They obviously have a height disadvantage as well, because it was Anthony Miller and Darnell Mooney, and Mooney wasn't going to catch that ball. I mean, he was swarmed, and I don't think he should have been expecting that ball in the corner, and Foles should have just threw it away. You know, I think one thing I want to bring back when it comes to his running ability, he mentioned this in his post game in Carolina. Talking about his god awful interception after they had just forced a fumble to give him possession within the 25 yard line at the time, and he had said that he threw it because he was trying to be a hero. I almost look at him when he runs outside of the pocket and he doesn't want to take that run when it's open field, as he just wants to be it's like a hero moment. He tries to find the open pass as long as possible, but it's always almost until it's too late. So to me, he says he wants to stop doing that. He needs to show me he stopped trying to be a hero. Try and be at least just a game manager. That's all we really need. Because besides Foles, look, Foles, like I said, some bad decisions, but he can deliver the ball. We've seen it. We saw it on Monday Night Football. When he's given time and given the right play schemes and scenarios, he can make the plays. I mean, credit, that Cole Kmet catch was not ideal, but he was given time to roll out. He threw it where Kmet could only catch it, and it resulted in one of the best plays of the night. Same thing goes for the Allen Robinson throw, which, yes, he did miss a few of the deep ones, but again, another good throw. He was given enough time. He delivered the ball right where it needed to be. He's capable of doing it. I just wonder, with the line and how it's structured right now, how far can you go? Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I was so disappointed in Rashad Coward watching Monday Night Football. Some of the misplays he had against Aaron Donald, or just the fact that he would fire off the line with his head in the grass, which, for those listening, if you're a lineman, you are taught not to do that. You always have your head up. So the fact that his head was even down when he was firing off on a snap, that's bad mechanics. You know, and that's also goes back on Ryan Pace, because why aren't you hiring linemen? Why aren't you at least signing linemen or drafting linemen that are putting you in a better position to be successful on the offensive line? This seems to be an issue that keeps coming up over and over again. We go through small cycles of it every 5 years where the line slightly improves, then it declines. You know, I'm thinking back to 2010 for crying out loud, and the fact that the Bears were even that competent with that line that they had during the season. But honestly, with Foles, you know, he's got to get more time. You know, he's made some poor throws, but it comes back to the offensive line as well. And the play design on that particular interception, Will, where is Cole Kmet? Where is Jimmy Graham? You know, if we're in the red zone, we've seen this year the Bears like to use Jimmy Graham in that 5 to 10 yard range to get in the end zone. So why would you design a rollout play with your two smallest receivers being the ones going for the ball in the red zone when Jimmy Graham and Kmet both have proven either in the previous weeks or during the game that they will be able to catch these type of passes. Cole Kmet, for crying out loud, it's a disappointing thing. I have my own little thing on Kmet, but wrapping up on the Foles discussion, you know, that it just, there's so many aspects of him in the game that I think still get affected to where, you know, I put some blame on him, but again, Nagy and Pace didn't exactly give him the best scenario, at least in the last few weeks, that has allowed him to get chances to show that he can make these plays.
Yeah, and here's another nice little slap in the face in terms of talking about tight end, Zach. As I was eating my deep dish pizza before recording with you, I had ESPN on, and on the little news bar at the bottom of the screen, there is some Miami Dolphins news that they extended.
I saw that.
They extended Adam Shaheen to a 2-year contract.
That is a
extension.
Big slap in the face. Well, I was so upset when I read that this morning. I mean, the fact that he's shown flashes in Miami too. So it ticks me off in particular that we could get nothing out of him, but, you know, give him away for a 7th round. And sure enough, he's getting 2-year contracts out in Miami. Unreal. It's unreal, man.
And be fair, I don't think it's all on the Bears, because you know what? The guy couldn't stay healthy. Yes. I mean, you don't even know what you have in him if he's always getting hurt. And I know he did get banged up at least one time so far this season, but he obviously must be doing something out there where, you know, they like what he's doing. And you know what? We're 7 games in the Cole Kmet's career, and people are already starting to draw the comparisons between Shaheen's tenure here in Chicago and Kmet. Shaheen was also a 2nd-round pick a couple of years ago. He was advertised as the next Gronk, the baby Gronk, and he literally did nothing. He was never really featured as the number one wide receiver. Again, a lot of time missed due to injuries, couldn't practice, was getting hurt in preseason, was wishy-washy during the regular season. But even when he was healthy, I don't think the Bears ever really gave him a shot to be a number one or a true number two. And the same thing's happening with Cole Kmet. What is the sense of him essentially being the Bears' first-round draft pick, because he was the first pick for them in that draft, because, again, the Khalil Mack trade is still affecting the Bears in terms of their draft stock a little bit, which is fine. I'll take that. I'll do that trade over and over again. I don't have any regrets with it. However, you draft the guy with the second pick, technically your first pick, You hype this guy up like he's going to be something, and he's not even on the field. Third stringer or fourth stringer, Demetrius Harris is catching more balls. He's getting targeted more. Harris has actually made a couple of plays. I mean, he's nothing fantastic. I think he gets more criticism than he deserves. I mean, it's not his fault that he's playing and doing more than the guy they drafted. That's simply a personnel decision. That's on the coaching staff to get your rookie out there, a guy that's supposed to be a playmaker. And you said it perfectly earlier, Zach. Your two best, outside of Allen Robinson, your two other best people to catch the ball in the red zone and the end zone is Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet. Kmet showed it with that beautiful touchdown against Carolina last week, and Jimmy Graham's done it on a handful of occasions, including a one-handed grab against Tampa Bay a few weeks ago. Like, I don't understand. We've played 7 games now. And even if you're talking about prior heading into the Rams game the other day, hey, you played 6 games. You know what you have in your team after the first, I would say, 4 games of the season. The first quarter of the season, you know essentially what you have unless major injuries happen. And, you know, the Bears are the injury bug is starting to plague them. So it's the personnel decisions. And this is why I don't always blame Nagy. It's literally to complete the equation, it's Matt Nagy plus Ryan Pace equals offense is a mess, because we're down to 1 running back, essentially. David Montgomery, Ryan Nall just plays special teams, I guess, and sits on the bench hoping to get in because for
it's another one I don't get.
On
Will. I mean, you mentioned Demetrius Harris, and I'm cutting in only because Harris has had god-awful drops the last 2-3 weeks. So how in the world is he the number two in this scheme? You know, that's stuff we don't get. We don't get to hear why. And the press conferences, Matt Nagy's press conferences have come down to basically, we'll give bare minimum like takes on things that the reporters want to just give them enough of a bait for them to write something. But they're not great press conferences. You know, he doesn't give out details. But I have to ask, where are the details, man? Why do you keep saying that we need to have more Cole Kmet, but you don't do it consistently in a game?
That's the problem, Zach, is he will acknowledge. He acknowledges offense isn't playing well. Trubisky needs to play better. You know, the play calling isn't that great. But he apparently doesn't want to make enough changes. I mean, We're not at practice every day. We're not in the locker room. We're not in the film room. We're not in his office or anything. But we know he's stubborn because he won't let his offensive coordinator maybe try a game at calling plays. He's obviously not changing enough because it's the same recipe for disaster on the field every week. This started last year when he would acknowledge, well, Mitch has to be better. We have to get better running the football. Every single thing that was a problem last year is a problem this year, and they can't run the football. The offensive line started off the year, they were running the ball with a little bit of success. I think Jermaine Ifedi has been pretty solid, at least in the running department, in terms of replacing Kyle Long. But yeah, now you have Cody White here. Apparently the injury isn't that severe, but it's some kind of calf injury. I've been looking it up. There's no timetable for him yet. But if you're without two of your interior linemen in terms of your center and one of your guards, you know, because obviously Daniel's out for the season, that's huge. And this is where I'm going to kind of turn the heat up on Pace is two things. And I'll get your opinions on these two positions that Pace screwed up. First off, he drafted two offensive linemen in this past draft. He always gets criticized for not drafting, but he did. But guess what? They both came in the seventh round. One got released and maybe one's on the practice squad. I don't even know if they're on the team anymore, to be quite honest with you. But you know that two seventh round picks aren't likely to make the team. They might be practice squad and you might develop them, or they're just a wash. Because you have to use the draft pick and try on somebody. They didn't acquire any legitimate backup depth. Okay, they weren't going to get rid of Leno or Massey. Everybody thinks they need to do that. They're not going to because they have big contracts that the Bears are going to have to eat up and keep paying even if they cut them. They're not at that point where they could be released. I don't know all the contract details, but I could tell you that right now with not even looking at my computer screen and looking it up. They're not going anywhere. But they weren't prepared with depth for when these injuries happen, because guess what? You know what's going to happen. It's football. It's the worst sport when it comes to injuries because so many guys get beat up in a season. And we talked about it on numerous occasions. Was it week two or week three of the season when half the league stars got decimated? We lost so many of them, unfortunately. I believe it was week two with Barkley and all these guys. The injury bug finally hit the Bears and the backups. I mean, I don't even think they blocked Aaron Donald or anybody in that game. And then, Bobby Massey and them were disappointing. So the lack of line depth, that's on Pace. And then the last thing is, we talked about this, I had you on at the beginning of the season, should the Bears go after Leonard Fournette? Because even with Cohen and Montgomery, there's still not a lot of running back depth there, because Cohen only does, special plays and special teams. And Montgomery really hasn't proven to be a solid number one back yet. They didn't go for him. Cohen gets hurt. Patterson hasn't worked out as a running back special play option either. So you're essentially down to one running back. Le'Veon Bell gets released. Nagy says in the press conferences, we're not looking at him. We're not really interested. We don't need him. Really? I'm amazed. It's like, my thing is, did you even talk to him? Because if Bell said, I don't want to come to Chicago, okay, well, you can't do anything about that. But if he had any legitimate interest, or Leonard Fournette had any legitimate interest, why didn't you bring him in? So I want to ask you that in terms of, Ryan Pace's personnel decisions with the lack of depth on the offensive line and the lack of two star-studded running backs that became available in the middle of the season almost as gifts. The Bears weren't interested. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man. I looking back at Ryan Pace's draft record, it is not shown that he really has invested much into the O line as much as he needs to. And this year, you want to look at also some of the signings. I've appreciated Robert Quinn to this point. I will not say that he's not been spectacular, because I'm still waiting for him to get a little more presence into the quarterback's face. He seems to he always has two moves. It's usually swimming outside or something like that, speed rush. So that's one signing. The other one's Jimmy Graham, and that one's at least lived up to to what he was paid. But you look at those two, that was most of the Bears cap. So with that being said, it filled some pieces that were probably missing last year, but I almost wonder if that was just being disguised a little too much with the O-line, because Mitch Trubisky's pretty mobile. So anything that's wrong with the O-line, you can probably get away with a little bit with a mobile QB, but it really comes out when you start putting someone like a Nick Foles back there that is a traditional stand in the pocket, I need to look around the pocket QB. And, you know, it's just shown, hey, Pace has not been putting much into it. I mean, you're saying seventh round picks this year, which are usually throwaways, you know. So he assumed that most of his personnel was fine. That's why he went out and got Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson. Johnson's been an excellent pick. Kmet, I think, will be once they stop messing around and give him the number two tight end spot like they should. You know, and previous drafts haven't shown exactly that they're willing to give that money. Locking up Leno and Massey, you know, Leno, at least in 2018, had shown that he has flashes of a good tackle. And quite frankly, out of the two, he's much better than Massey, I would say. Leno does have slips, but Bobby Massey, I mean, when you're getting burned by Leonard Floyd during Monday Night Football, and he records two sacks on you guys.
He's playing.
I know.
Playing
he just slapped his hands. Like, I understand that there's the tight end shuffle is what I call it. You know, you have to get back real quick on your feet. You know, right. And if you're right, say you're right. You know, you're right tackle like he was there. You know, right left, right left, right left in a pounding motion. But eventually, you have to move if he gets too far on your edge. You don't just get your hands slapped, pal. You know, that's a statue, and that's not how a tackle's made. So they invested all this money into Leno and Massey. Massey's been the weaker link of the two, in my opinion. And then, obviously, with injuries, it amplifies things. Because, quite frankly, I still have a lot of faith in Cody Whitehair. James Daniels, I think, is a pretty decent guard. But at the same point, their tackles aren't exactly helping him out. And Rashad Coward, I don't know how much better he is than Alex Barrs. But apparently, he's somehow able to beat out Alex Barrs in practice to get that spot. So, go figure. Overall, though, Pace has failed, I would say, to invest in the line is definitely what's coming up, and it's been more evident as you look back at his draft record. And then in particular, you know, the running back scenario, it just, yeah, Le'Veon Bell they missed. I was one of those people that was iffy about it because I was worried about how he'd gel in the locker room. Since the Bears have done so well with Nagy to rebuild locker room trust after the Trestman era, that I didn't really have faith that I would want to see Le'Veon Bell in there. But honestly, it looks like he just wants to win. Quite frankly, if Chicago could have offered him maybe more money than Kansas City, they could have landed him because they do have some cap that they would have been able to do it. But honestly, I think that Kansas City is just too tantalizing. But yeah, Le'Veon Bell, I mean, if you add him, you know, I disagree with Matt Nagy in the fact that we don't need him because, yes, David Montgomery, he's fine. But even with the poor offensive line play, sometimes he does make boneheaded decisions at the line where he seems to not see an open hole. Le'Veon Bell's style of running is patient running. So if you have some time, which isn't often for the Bears, but if you have some time, he can find the hole much better. And he would have been a nice change of pace back as well as a pass catcher. You know, Montgomery is as well, but you know, you have two pass catching running backs, give some more versatility. You know, Cordell Patterson's been done admirably in his position, but teams seem to be keying in on that, and Patterson's not exactly a traditional running back. So, again, personnel decision there. Ryan Nall sitting there as a traditional running back, so I don't know what he's not doing to get on the field is all I can say. Yeah, it's failure on those positions. You know, I wish that at least the line is what concerns me more now that it's become more evident that the investment has not been made there. And this is something that is only fixable in the offseason. So, it only gets worse unless you can find someone at the trade deadline that will be a partner and give someone that is a high caliber, I would say a high caliber guard away, then I don't know how much you're going to be able to improve it, you know, or at the very least a high caliber right tackle to push Massey to the sidelines. Cause like I said, Leno, I think's done all right as a left tackle, but Massey on Monday night and Rashad Coward are definitely, in my opinion, the two weakest links on the offensive line right now. And it shows that Pace did not invest well when he has been building this team.
And I don't think he's going to make any trades because I think I think if you're the Bears, I mean, after you did that massive trade for Mac, I mean, that affected their draft stock, you know, 3 years later. So I think you need to, and I think it is kind of smart. Like you need to kind of hold on to those draft picks, but you brought up a great point with Robert Quinn. You know, I've been saying this about Quinn since literally the day they signed him, and I did a podcast on, you know, recapping free agency moves. That is the most Bears signing right there. I think it's a good signing still. He's been disappointing this year. Maybe he's still hurt because he was on the injury report and missed the first game of the season. Maybe he's not fully healthy. I don't think Mac's fully healthy. I mean, he's on the injury report almost every week, so that's a sign something's wrong. So You know, he's got four more years of this deal to prove it, but 5 years, $75 million for a veteran, a really good veteran pass rusher. That is such a Bears freaking move to make, man. And meanwhile, they let, you know, if they wanted to get another wide receiver, they could have spent some of that 75 mil on Robbie Anderson, who would have been a great number two receiver playing alongside Allen Robinson. I wanted the Bears to sign Robbie Anderson. He played extremely well with a crappy Jets team, and he's literally playing like a number one wide receiver out there in with the Panthers and being a top threat for Teddy Bridgewater. You know, Jamison Crowder, like there's a bunch of other guys, even not just this past offseason, but the last couple of years. You know, they're banking on Mooney to become something. They banked on Anthony Miller, who was another, second-round pick a couple of years ago. These guys aren't performing. The problem is they're not using Mooney the right way. And this is where, again, I think it's common sense, Zach, because me and you could play Madden and figure out this stuff too, or just watch on the, you know, on our TV screens in our living rooms. Okay, Mooney's not a big, tall, built receiver. Why are you expecting him to, why are you throwing jump balls to him 40 yards down the field? Now, they're overthrowing him on some great breakouts that he's had where he's burned the cornerbacks. But, you know, again, when you need your big-bodied receivers in the end zone or on a jump ball type of catch, they're not there. Unless it's always to Robinson, who's going to get double covered, or it's to Jimmy Graham, who they know to put two or three guys on in the end zone because that's where he's the biggest threat. So it's common sense things like that where you don't even have – I mean, your two biggest receivers are Cordarrelle Patterson and Allen Robinson, and Patterson doesn't even play wide receiver anymore because he's a failed wide receiver. He doesn't play well at his original position. So I'm telling you, Zach, I just don't think the talent's there, and I said this in the past, and I'll say it again. I was never hyped on this – on the talent on this offense. I don't think the personnel has a lot of playmaking ability. There's a lot of guys you're waiting to see, whether it's a rookie like Mooney, or you're hoping and praying that a guy like Anthony Miller shakes off the crappy year he had last year and does something. It's not happening. David Montgomery, he's a shifty running back, but you know what? I don't see him do anything that makes him a threat like Christian McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley or some of these top running backs, whether the play calling's right, whether the blocking's good or bad. I mean, you can dance around all you want, but a guy, what made Matt Forte great is because he had the shiftiness of David Montgomery, but he was able to just go. He would just make a quick decision and he'd run, and then he'd use the shiftiness. He's an open field runner, and that's what Montgomery is. And they're not doing that though. They run him up the middle in between the tackle and the guard or the center and the guard all the time. They never run it outside. You know, they thought running it towards Aaron Donald's side was going to be successful time and time again, and it didn't work. So it's a lack of personnel, and I think it's a lack of common sense on Nagy's part. So, I mean, let's stick with the play calling and the strategy here with the personnel you have. Like, what has bothered you the most with Nagy's play calling? And again, with the personnel they have, what do you think they need to try to do to incorporate the talents and abilities of who they have? Because obviously they can't really acquire much more at this point unless they – start making drastic trades, which I don't think they're going
to
do.
What frustrates me the most is that we're actually seeing what works, and he seems to instantly change it when this thing works. I'm referring to the hurry up. So something that Nick Foles has seemed to excel at since he's been playing starting quarterback for Chicago is he likes to hurry it up. He likes to get tempo, up-tempo offense. And this was the case actually happening against the Los Angeles Rams. They did that for the first series of their game. That's how they ended up getting a field goal was, you know, they had an excellent pass, or at least excellent catch, more likely than not, to Cole Kmet, which then led to them hurrying up their offense, getting a quick first down afterward. But Matt Nagy slowed it down and decided to huddle up. The thing is, the Bears, when it comes to personnel, you need to essentially get on the field and start moving the ball. Give the defense little chance to adjust to what you're doing. Because once you give Matt Nagy that option to slow down and get what he wants in personnel-wise and what he feels is the best play methodically into the game, it seems like defenses just cue in on that. And I noticed this, like you mentioned this earlier, noticing this with the Tampa Bay game. You know, Nick Foles is on the sideline, you know, kind of just trying to get at Nagy saying, hey, man, we need to hurry it up. And I agree. You know, Nick Foles, again, he's not mobile. So why are you trying to run methodical plays that are, you know, these RP, at least these RPOs that take some time to develop when your line is not capable of giving you that time to develop a play like that? And why are you trying to get, you know, five-step drops when five-step drops, you're not going to have time for five-step drops, you know? So why not get a hurry up? Why not do that as a better play calling style? Because it's worked. We've seen it in games. They've been more successful doing hurry up and getting up tempo, and Foles likes it, and he said he likes it. So why not do that? You know, Brian Greasy, I've heard this, and you've heard this probably around Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana. He was mentioning on the broadcast, you know, that at least I don't know how accurate this is to the production interview, but you know, he was saying that Nick Foles mentioned that sometimes Nagy calls plays that he knows he can't execute in time. Now there's a big ruckus about that in at least post-game interviews with Nick Foles, and then like on Tuesday about that as well when they were interviewing Nagy. But you know, they tried to push it off, but I wonder if that's just the case. You know, why are you not, you know, playing to the strengths of the offense, which is up-tempo offense? And then the same thing with personnel. Cole Kmet, stop using Demetrius Harris. Put Harris as the third tight end. Only use him for blocking scenarios or things of the like, and put Kmet into the game, man. He needs to be in consistently. He is a good pass catcher. We have seen it already. Two games in a row, we've seen him make impact plays. Why is he not consistently in the game as another option? I mean, considering how big he is, you know, a great idea for some pass plays, make Kmet or Jimmy Graham always one of the checkdowns. So they're one of the bigger guys that say that you have a corner rush up to them, they can shove them aside and get an extra 2 to 3 yards on it after impact. You know, instead of trying to always execute, at least either doing these 5-yard curl routes that don't always work because Nick Foles doesn't always read them fast enough, and sometimes during the game they finally jump the routes because they consistently do it enough, you know, or trying to do something to David Montgomery where he has no chance to even get any yardage. Either it's something that's like a flat route that ends up getting beaten up in the backfield too. It's either that or you have Nick Foles throw up a prayer, and I don't like that situation either. You know, getting a second tight end that's competent and can catch the ball, you know, Cole Kmet, the guy you drafted highest in this past draft, is someone you should be having in on for personnel. There's no excuse for it, in my opinion. I don't understand why he does it. And that's the thing. We won't know because we're not at Hollis Hall. And he doesn't really lay into it because he always tries to brush it off like he's going to eventually play him more. He got one more catch this game and last, so that was cool, but Kmet's really the biggest problem I have because he is an impact player and they seem to not use him enough. And again, would be great for those type of plays to just get it out and to disrupt the pass rush. Because once you start doing checkdowns where these guys can get 5 to 7 yards on you each time or more if you break it, eventually that pass rush has to back off, or they'll stop blitzing you, or they'll stop, or you at least have a better chance to establish plays and potentially the run game as well. Which I should have say, you know, running with Cordell Patterson is my last point. It's fine, but people are keying in on that too. I mean, 4th-and-1 and you run a 7-yard in the backfield pitch to Cordell Patterson and he ends up 2 yards short of the first down marker. Yeah, I don't think that was a great call either. You know, you have actual running backs on this roster. Stop. I mean, Cordell Patterson's versatile. You know, either start using him at least where you're interspersing Ryan Nall to make it more at least disguised that you're going to use Patterson, or I mean, maybe use him as just a receiver, which he is not a good receiver. Yeah, it's hard to get adjusted to what is best. The most obvious one though, just put Cole Kmet in. Stop wasting our time with Demetrius Harris and just give him a chance so that Nick Foles can also have a chance to where you can then push the pass rush off. I mean, just give Foles better opportunities too with that, and you'll have, I would say, at least some more success. There's not much more you can say. The offense is going to be kind of in this stalled state until next year, and I don't even know how much you'll get next year trying to retool it or how these pieces will be adjusted as well.
You know, the Bears, I think, or specifically the offense, and meaning the coaching staff like Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator, and the players in general, I think there's still too much reliance on the defense. They're trying to make it like 2018 again, where, you know, they're hoping that Mac's going to get 2 or 3 sacks a game and a couple of other guys are going to get sacks. And they're hoping for turnovers that are going to give the offense the ball on, say, their own, on the opponent's 20 or 30 yard line, and that maybe you're going to get a couple pick sixes or scoop and scores. I know Eddie Jackson should have three freaking defensive touchdowns this year, but the damn flags, they keep getting called on the Bears more, I think, than they actually get, you know, called in favor of the Bears, you know, with the holding that happens nonstop every play. But you can't use that as an excuse, just like how you can't keep relying and hoping that your defense is going to score one or two touchdowns a game and, you know, get five sacks and get four turnovers. Like, that'd be great, but we know that 2018 was kind of a special, year. The odds of that happening again, and the philosophy that Pagano brings, where I thought he was going to be more aggressive with the blitzes, but I don't see it. Or if it's happening, yeah, it's just not being as effective. You know, the Robert Quinn signing, I'm willing to give it a little bit more time. The Bears defense is good in stats you don't really hear about. Like, Quinn and Mack have like one of the best like pass rushing efficiencies in the league. You know, they're up there with some of the other pass rushing duos from other teams. You know, Jalen Johnson, the rookie, he gets targeted, he gets burned sometimes, he gets roasted by the commentators in many games, but the guy still has some great stats out there with the amount of passes and targets and yards and completion percentage and things like that. He gets targeted a lot, but he's actually been pretty darn good. And even him and Kyle Fuller, one of the best cornerback duos in the league right now in terms of some of those stats that you actually have to look really hard to find, or they get brought up in the broadcast and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. You know, it's not just going to ESPN or NFL.com and looking up touchdowns and tackles. Like, these are other stats that come from different places and whatnot. The Bears are good with that. But I'm not going to totally excuse the defense either. They didn't tackle well at all against the Rams. I do wish they would sack the quarterback more, and I do wish they'd force more turnovers. I mean, they've been a really good defense, but I don't know if they've been elite. The only thing they've been elite with is keeping the scores under control. You know, they don't allow a lot of points, and even when they kind of have that bend but don't break mentality where they may get beat and get driven down the field, but as soon as they get in the red zone, they're tough. Not too many. I think it was the Panthers scored the first red zone touchdown against the Bears. Maybe it was them, maybe not. Maybe it was Tampa. But like, first couple of games of the season, nobody was scoring touchdowns in the red zone on the Bears or beating them that bad. So when they'd get down to the field, they'd hold them to field goals or cause a turnover. So, but that's the only thing the Bears have been elite in on defense. But when they're out on the field for 80% of the game, they're freaking tired. Like, I still defend this defense more than I defend the offense, even with a couple struggles and issues with the defense. So we've talked so much about offense, but to kind of complete the full picture here, what are your thoughts on the defense? And also, could you maybe enlighten me as to why Ted Ginn doesn't catch fair catch?
Your guess is as good as mine, Will, because they seem to not have a solution for the absence of Tariq Cohen. I mean, they have options. You know, I imagine Cordell Patterson could probably catch a punt. I imagine that you can get Eddie Jackson back there, or you can do Anthony Miller, although Miller has had issues with receiving punts, so that's probably why he's not back there. But I don't know. Ted Ginn almost looks like he's a veteran that's just there for a paycheck. And as long as the thing lands reasonably, he's not going to go for the ball. You know, I understand Johnny Hecker I would say it's not even arguable. He's the best punter in the NFL. So obviously he's going to down a lot of punts, pretty much burying you. But at least catch the ball so you don't bury yourself even farther. I mean, that is a failure in special teams right there. I know Tariq Cohen was really good at getting those catches, but you got to have someone else. There's several other people on this roster that can catch and fair catch a ball. Again, Cordell Patterson to me makes sense because he already does kickoffs. Why not give him that opportunity to where he can catch the punts and try and break something if he wants? I know he's not traditionally that, but you would think that should translate pretty well. I don't know. I'm not at those practices, so I don't know what goes through the minds of the coaching staff when they're picking out what to do. Obviously, Ted Ginn has a track record, so that's why he's there, but he's not proving it, and it's not worth our time. Defensively, the only gripes I really have on them, and you know, it's really just these long drives. You know, last few weeks against Carolina, against LA, it's mainly been drives that have just continued from poor penalties, you know, or just missed time penalties, really in particular, Carolina in particular, I know they had at least one drive that was of 90 yards. Another one that was of 70 plus. That was for their scoring drives. So you have to find a way to get rid of these poorly timed penalties. Some of them are definitely ticky-tacky, and you know, I would say some of the refs have gotten on people this year that I don't understand. For example, in Carolina, you know, Kyle Ford getting called for a defenseless receiver penalty. Okay, that was a terribly called one, in my opinion. The receiver had a few steps and then got hit. So, you know, I don't agree with that. But there are ones like, for example, Akeem Hicks on Monday Night Football. Dude was not disciplined and just seemed to be committing penalties left and right at the worst possible times. You know, or you'd have, or the other thing that goes with discipline is there's a lot of missed tackles this year that I've just seen. I'm going, man, just break down and go after the quarterback, you know? And it seems like they're so reckless in abandonment, trying to get after the ball carrier, that sometimes it looks like fundamental tackling just gets broken down and it ends up for a few extra yards, which then prolongs a drive, which then makes you more tired, considering that you're already having the disadvantage of an offense that is barely competent enough to find a receiver or at least hand off the ball and get a yard, if you will. So, I mean, penalties have been really hard for the Bears this year. And we knew about this too, Will. The run defense is not that good. It's okay. But a good run offense, or one that's a lot more competent, you know, surprisingly, Carolina couldn't really do much against Chicago. So I was shocked. And I actually got myself a little hyped up against L.A. But L.A., you know, it's Sean McVay. And Sean McVay can find your weakness. He is that guru. You know, the guy that people I thought were saying Matt Nagy was going to be, McVay is that guy. You know, that's the guy we were hoping Nagy was going to be as an offensive play caller. So, you know, definitely his exposure, because Eddie Goldman's missed quite a bit. I mean, Akeem Hicks, he gets double teamed the most in the NFL.
Big time.
But once he's double teamed, there's really no one usually there to cover up where that hole is. Because a lot of times with what teams do against the Bears is either they will try and stretch the field with them to get just enough of a hole on the outside, because it seems like for some reason there is not good contain with Chicago's defense on the outside edges most of the time, or they'll just run right at Hicks, and once they double or triple team him, it seems like linebackers just get lost in the fray, which then brings me to Danny Trevathan. And man, this past week I would say I miss Nick Kwiatkowski. I feel that they made the mistake with paying Trevathan. He has the name. He's been with Chicago since the John Fox era. And, you know, he's just not done it for me this year. You know, he's had some flashes against Carolina, and he looked like he was at least a little more up to speed. But he just showed this past week on Monday Night Football that, you know, he is not the same level that he has been playing in recent years in Chicago. And Kwiatkowski had the youth. Yes, he had that pectoral injury earlier in the year, but I think he was going to be more worth your money. He already knew the scheme anyway that Pagano was running, and he was Kwiatkowski's blitzing capabilities, pairing that with Roquan, it was a bulldozer last year. I feel like you're definitely missing that. I know Pagano's not being aggressive with the blitz, but I mean, the fact if he would have had Kwiatkowski there, Kwiatkowski's an efficient blitzer, and that is sorely missed. And that's just, I think to me, that's one of the biggest reasons, besides that Kwiatkowski showed last year has improved pass coverage, that they missed on that too. Those are the only gripes I have. The Bears defense overall is really good. Still top 10 in the league, but man, it could be better. And there's been mistakes either on the field this year or offensive or offseason choices that have hinged on making this team potentially get back to what it once was 2 years ago.
Yeah, one quick thing I wanted to say on Robbie Anderson to kind of prove my point as to why I wanted him to come to the Bears. I just wanted to look up his stats and his contract, and I'm going to touch on Danny Trevathan too. Robbie Anderson, 2-year deal for $20 million with Carolina. So this year, next year, he's in Carolina, and you know, I think they'd be smart to maybe extend him. He's got 46 catches for 640 yards this year, one touchdown. And one, two, three games where he's recorded over 100 passing or catching yards after catch. And you know, maybe we throw in the fifth game or the fourth game, because against the Cardinals, he had 99. So pretty close. I'll give him that one. So he has recorded 70 or more yards in almost every game this season. Only one game he had 55 yards. So He's putting up stats that would have made him a perfect number two next to Allen Robinson, like I said earlier. But apparently we care more about making a really exciting defense to watch that we forget that we have an offense to cater to as well. I'm just going to say two quick things about Danny Trevathan. I absolutely agree with you, Zach. The guy's been disappointing. Nick Kwiatkowski is looking like he's probably the better solution because he was younger, less injury prone, and just had a lot more going for him in terms of impact ability on the field. Danny Trevathan, when I see him, he's so slow. It looks like he's running on sand. I've seen people say that on Twitter, and it's absolutely true. He gets burned on routes when he's in pass coverage, and also against the Rams, it looked like he was trying to tackle a wet noodle. He kept slipping. Running backs kept slipping out of his grasp so many occasions. And also, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've noticed he hasn't been on the field a whole lot. The Bears are almost doing this, you know, the typical 3-4. You have two middle linebackers. It'd be Roquan and Trevathan. Well, I've noticed it's almost like there's two or three outside linebackers and then Roquan. Like there's no Danny Trevathan. Like they're going with one middle linebacker. I've noticed a lot of those kind of packages on the field quite a bit this season. And lastly on the defense, and then we'll get to the last topic here. There's no excuse for the double coverage things anymore, Zach. Okay. Akeem Hicks, yes, he gets double teamed, but guess what? Okay. They put one or two linemen or linemen and a tight end or linemen and a running back on. They put two guys on him, but they're also putting two guys on Khalil Mack. So if you have three or four guys focusing on those two players, then where's Robert Quinn? Where's Roquan Smith? Where's Danny Trevathan? Where's Barkavius Mingo? Where's James Fodders? You know, these are all these guys, you know, Bilal Nichols, John Jenkins, all these guys, and a lot of them have made some flashy plays, and we know that they're good. Why isn't anybody else stepping up? I don't think that's an excuse anymore, Zach. It's like there's too many guys. Yes, they miss Eddie Goldman. That's a huge loss because Eddie Goldman's better than Bilal Nichols. There's no other better. It's the best interior linemen on the team are Hicks and Goldman, and you're down one of them for the entire year. There's no more excuses. I don't think that's an excuse because if offenses are going to dedicate three or four blockers to your two best pass rushers or just interior front seven guys in general and Mac and Akeem, because you know Akeem's a run stuff.
Look, Robertson Harris.
I don't think there's an excuse.
Is one. Yeah, look, Robertson Harris is one that.
Him too.
Look, dude needs to get some muscle on his bones next year if he's going to keep playing that spot, because I almost feel like that team's target when he's on the field to get run scenarios, because he's not a run stopper. Dude's more of a finesse inside lineman trying to go for the ball. He seems to have taken a step back this year. You know, Mario Edwards Jr. has been really impressive. If there's any interior lineman I think needs to be on the field more, it's actually him, quite frankly. I mean, Bilal Nichols has done all right, but it's not living up to the hype. I actually like Edwards a lot, and I got to put a little more of a sting into the wound here, Will. Just checking on Kwiatkowski just to make sure we're not saying things that are inaccurate. Raiders Wire, which is one of those one of the USA Today style sports blogs, Kwiatkowski is ranked top 10 in the NFL right now per PFF in overall linebacker ranking, and this has been for the last 6 weeks. So he currently has an overall grade of 75.2, which gives him a number 10 overall linebacker in the NFL. And yeah, he's been one of the better ones at the passing game as well. And they cite him for being excelling in the pass protection. Again, you want to say that they did the wrong thing in signing and aging Danny Trevathan. There is your proof right there. He is the only one that seems to be excelling in the Las Vegas Raiders defense that has gone above and beyond what he has been paid this year, because apparently they said to Corey Littleton, and a credit, if anyone's a Raiders fan listening to a Bears podcast, first, what are you doing? Second off, you know, Corey Littleton, according to what I read, has not been doing well, but Kwiatkowski looks like he's doing what was advertised. So Ryan Pace, what happened there, man? Was it just a little too much loyalty? Cause I get loyalty, but also the NFL's a business. And generally the trends for older linebacker versus one that's showing the same, if not better production with more youth, you generally sign the youthful guy. So what happened there? You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think I picked Trevathan just because of the leadership. And I mean, he was playing pretty well the last 2 years. Last year, I think he got injured again, which ended his season earlier than expected. But I was like, okay, you know, you got the young Roquan, you got a lot of other guys. I think Nick is one of those guys. It sucks to let him go. But again, I always argued that he should have got more of a chance, even if they maybe tried moving him to outside linebacker or something, because, you know, they drafted him in the fourth round in 2016. He always impressed in preseason, and the occasional times he got out on the field because of injuries and whatnot, he played pretty well. But the Bears have this weird fascination to where they expect fifth, sixth, and seventh round guys to perform, and Pace has hit on a few, to be fair, but it's like guys that he's taken in the second round either don't get a chance or they just flop. So it's just a weird thing. And the last roster thing I want to touch on here, the Bears, we were talking about the crappiness with the punting and whatnot. They did sign Dwayne Harris today to the practice squad, but they're going to try to work him in. He's averaged 10 yards on 180 punt returns with 4 touchdowns and 25.8 yards on 163 kick returns with the touchdown. Also caught 77 passes for 874 yards and 8 touchdowns. Okay, he'd be a depth receiver, and he's actually a little bit proven when it comes to punts and kickoffs. So I mean, I'm actually okay with the move, but I mean, I would release Ted Ginn. Like, if the guy's not going to do anything and he refuses to even catch the ball on a fair catch, what are you paying him for? What's he doing on the team? He's taking up a roster spot. So as we wrap things up here, Zach, because I know you're going to go do your podcast, the last thing I want to ask you is just want to kind of get your outlook on how you think the rest of the season goes, because the end of the second half of the season, man, it's tough. They play the Saints Sunday. They have Tennessee the week after that, then they play the Vikings, then they finally get their bye week. I mean, they're playing 10 of their 16 games before their bye week here. And then you got 2 games against the Packers, another against the Lions, the Texans with still a good quarterback and Will Fuller, unless they trade some of these guys. You're playing a lot of good offenses here to end the season. So what's your outlook? Do you think they keep this winning record going?
Or I
do you
fear think that this, by the time you arrive in Minnesota, or to go to Minnesota, when you're hosting Minnesota, my bad, I'm worried you're gonna be 5-4. New Orleans, I mean, they've been lukewarm this year for considering the past 2 seasons they've had, but they also get Michael Thomas back. Yes, he was supposedly trying to get traded, but dude's gonna play unless he says something differently. He's gonna be healthy enough, I think, to play. So good luck trying to defend that. And mainly it's just good luck trying to keep up with it. It's not really trying to defend it. I missaid that, because good luck with any of these next 2 teams trying to keep up with their offenses, because New Orleans, you know, as much as they don't have Michael Thomas, they still have been putting up points week in and week out. Same goes for Tennessee. Tennessee has been the cardiac kids like the Bears, except they look more impressive and more well-rounded. So, I mean, you can probably put up some points, but the Titans have a very well-rounded offense all across the board, and they have Derrick Henry, leading rusher in the NFL, guy that can basically bruise anyone, and you need to tackle him like with form almost every time. Otherwise, he's not going to go down. It's going to be tough, and I can see them going 5-4 going into Week 10 against Minnesota. But if I'm looking at the rest of the schedule, I think they can get to 10 wins still, and possibly at least land a wild card. Minnesota's been weak this year, and generally, they just let go of Yannick Ngakoue. So I don't think you're going to have as much of a struggle there. You're going to be able to have a bit more presence in both those matchups. Detroit, I think, is still not completely there, and I think with Nick Foles, you're going to be able to steal one, which also this hinges on who's your quarterback, depending on how these next 2 weeks go. We don't know if Mitch Trubisky is going to get another shot or not. It sounds like that they're not at that point, but if, for example, you know, Matt Nagy living in his fantasy land, which, funny enough, apparently good offense is fantasy land to him, as he's mentioned in previous press conferences, maybe he sticks with Foles, maybe he goes back to Mitch. And if it's with Mitch, I don't know. And if it's with Foles, I don't know. They're both kind of equal, but just with slightly different traits. I think you can get 10 wins if you sweep Minnesota, if you sweep Detroit, and if you get what on paper looks like patty cake games against, you know, Jacksonville and Houston, that puts you at 10. Even with Green Bay being the juggernaut that it is in the North, you know, even if you get swept by Green Bay, you know, say you lose to New Orleans and Tennessee, that's 10-6. And at that point, it comes down to tiebreakers. luckily Chicago, you know, did win some crucial NFC matchups early on. So even if Carolina does come back to be a 10-6 team, they'll have that. Tampa Bay is probably going to I would say it'd be one of the tops in the South, but say if New Orleans keeps running the table and then somehow Tampa Bay slips up later down the line, I don't know how, then, you know, they hold that tiebreaker as well. And if they can steal one against Green Bay, you know, that would help too. If they even steal one against New Orleans or Tennessee, that would help. You know, 10 wins is not unrealistic for this defensive team because they're going to play teams that are weaker overall when you compare the fact that the Bears as an overall unit still have a juggernaut defense behind them. But it's not going to be a good playoff team. I think Chicago still makes the playoffs, but they're going to make it as probably like a sixth or seventh, like a basically a two or three wild card is all I'm saying. They'll get knocked out early, but it's mainly because they got a hot start and they were able to hold out via just basically because they got a hot start to cushion them against good opponents. So yeah, it's they can get there. I think they can win some of these later patty cake games after New Orleans and Tennessee. Green Bay, I don't see them stealing a game. So 10 wins, I would say, is best case scenario. Worst case scenario for me, let's see, a split Minnesota. You lose the Detroit matchup as well. So let's see there. You take 5-4, you know, then be like 6-5. Let's see here. Then 6-6 if you have the Detroit loss. You know, probably maybe like an 8-8, honestly, because that includes Green Bay sweeping them, but they still pull off Houston and Jacksonville, in my opinion. So, you know, worst case scenario, you're 8-8, 7-9. But I think the Bears still have a route to where they can at least make a wild card and at least just show that they said, hooray, we made a playoff appearance, is all I can tell you.
I usually have, you know, record predictions and stat predictions, you know, on hand. I really don't know what to say about the Bears yet. The only things I could tell you is that I feel like the only almost guaranteed win or the only game you feel very good about is when they play Jacksonville on December 27th, which is week 16. The Lions are the real deal, and I'm saying that for the first time publicly because I've always been kind of brushing them aside. That trade for Everson Griffin, they're not messing around, and they're, you know, with the healthy Matthew Stafford, I mean, that offense is better than the Bears. The Packers have a better offense than the Bears. Everybody has a better offense than the Bears outside of Jacksonville.
You're like saying the Jets are better than the Bears.
They've got a couple receivers, and they got a good running back.
Are we confirming this right now? Okay.
I'm saying what's left on the
schedule. I know we're talking the schedule, but I'm like, hang on. You just said anyone out there. So I'm like, all right.
No. Okay. At least for a couple of teams that are left. But the sad thing is, I mean, it's like Bears and Jets, and I mean, who else has a bad offense at the Jacksonville? I mean, those might be the top three worst. I mean, it's not a good place to be in if you're the Bears. And I mean, honestly, like the one guaranteed prediction I could give you here, numbers wise, is I think the Bears are going to lose 27-14 on Sunday against the Saints because. Even though they might get handed the gift of not having Michael Thomas, they have other receivers. They have an elite quarterback in Drew Brees, and they got, you know, Alvin Kamara. So it's rough, man. I think at most the Bears get 10 games. I think they're going to be very close. I think they're going to be closer to 500. This could be an 8 or 9-1 team this year now because, you know, you might be able to sneak one from Green Bay, I think, at home. You should beat the Texans. You should beat Jacksonville. The Lions is a winnable game, and the Vikings, as much as I would say you should beat them twice, they still, if Dalvin Cook comes back healthy, they still got Thielen. Kirk Cousins, when you're going against the good Kirk Cousins, you're in trouble. You know, Tennessee, I'd even say Tennessee is beatable because if you take Derrick Henry out of the game, I don't know if that Bears defense, I think, could handle Tannehill. However, or if they take out Tannehill, can they at least keep, you know, Derrick Henry at bay? I'm not sure. But, you know, even the only thing I'll say about the Texans is, you know, I have Deshaun Watson in a fantasy league. Despite that team being bad and being like 1-6, Deshaun Watson still puts up numbers. He scores multiple touchdowns. He's thrown over 300 passing yards on a few occasions here. I mean, the guy is still good enough to keep the Texans in games. And you got a playmaking quarterback that's better. They got a playmaking quarterback while we have Nick Foles, who's kind of giving you a little bit of everything and you kind of get mixed results. It's a mixture. So at the end of the day, man, I don't know. I feel like even saying 10 wins is kind of pushing it.
No.
And if they're going to make the playoffs, it's definitely a wild card. They're not winning this division. The Green Bay, that was a fluke, rough, odd, rare, bad game by Rodgers and company on offense. They're going to be just fine. So anyways, thanks again for coming on again today, Zach. I do appreciate it. I will send you that.
I could use one deep dish pizza. So badly.
I'm going to send you a couple of stress balls too, because you know, I'm watching this Bears offense at work. You're going to need to squeeze one as you're watching. That's for sure. So, but yeah. I kind of thought about that. So, hey, you know, what the really good thing is, nobody listens to the end of this podcast.
You know darn well I'm going to be back on this.
Hey, did you squeeze one when Matt Nagy decided not to play Cole Kmet in again?
Stop it. No, you said it again.
Oh, that was on purpose. Oh, boy. Yeah. Hey, you know what? This is when the show goes from,
you know what? If we aren't cussing X-rated, a little bit, I guess, what's going on this last week.
Yeah, I'm usually a freaking choir boy on this thing. Like, I don't. Like,
oh, your pastor's going to be fine.
Like, in my head, I'm like, oh, my God. I just said, damn. Oh, my God. I got to remember this isn't the, there's no FCC going on here. So, but, oh boy.
He deserves it. I understand.
I blame Maggie. I blame the Bears offense.
Don't worry. We'll talk more. Maybe we'll be ranting again, or maybe we'll have happier days, Will. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll have you back on and maybe sooner rather than later with the way this is going. We're going to die on the Titanic
That's
together.
That's awesome.
Here,
right?
We're going to be the band. We're just going to keep playing the sad song. All right, man. Thanks again. Hey, everybody, make sure to check out Gridiron Gallery. Check him out on social media. See what he's talking about. And always follow his content as well. Always good football content on multiple leagues, too. If you're into the XFL and you want to see what's going on with that, he does coverage with that, especially now that they're coming back and many other things. So thank you guys for tuning into this episode and dealing with weird comments at the end. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you on the next one.
We threw it out. I'm like, God damn it.
Thanks for listening to Windy City Sports Talk. You can find more episodes on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Until next time, be well.